Great view, great people. Prime Rib Monday, Taco Tuesday, and new dinner specials on Thursday through Saturday. And check out the great new golf shop.
From the Fox Sports Studios in Los Angeles, here's Dan Beyer.
Dolphins running back Devon Achane is considered a game-time decision for tonight's Week 2 showdown with the Buffalo Bills. Kickoff from South Florida, 8:15 Eastern time. There are reports that the Dolphins are optimistic that Achane will go tonight. Green Bay Packers quarterback Jordan Love isn't practicing today because of his knee injury, while T. Higgins still has that strained hamstring in Cincinnati, and the Bengals wide receiver was not practicing. The woman who alleges she was sexually assaulted by Browns quarterback Deshaun Watson in 2020 will meet with the NFL. The woman has filed a civil suit against Watson, and her attorney told ESPN they have video and two witnesses who support the woman's claims. The Pac-12 Conference, which currently features just two schools, will expand to six in the fall of 2026. Boise State, Fresno State, San Diego State, and Colorado State are set to leave the Mountain West Conference for the Pac-12. Tigers and Rockies tied up at two in the seventh in Detroit.
Fox Sports update on KPRL, brought to you by Deeds Bar and Grill at the Paso Robles Golf Club. Great food, great view, great people. Prime Rib Monday, Taco Tuesday, and new daily specials. And check out the great new golf shop. Today in Farming on KPRL is brought to you by Paso Robles Glass, established in 1947, always up on the latest technology and training. They do windows right. Call Paso Robles Glass, 805-238-4014.
From the Ag Information Network, this is your Agribusiness Update. A report from the European Union suggests a major overhaul of its ag policy and subsidizing farmers based on their income rather than the size of their farms. The report also states Europeans eat more animal protein than scientists recommend and need to rebalance diets towards plant-based proteins. The European Commission president says farmers will only invest in more sustainable practices if they can live off their land and if we achieve our climate and environmental goals. U.S. beef exports continued building momentum in July. USDA data says July beef exports were up 7% from a year ago, the second largest of 2024. Export value rose 12% to $910 million, also the second highest of the year. July growth was fueled by higher demand in Japan, Taiwan, Mexico, and the Middle East. January through July, value increased 6% from last year despite a 2% drop in volume. The Consortium of Common Food, National Milk Producers Federation, and the U.S. Dairy Export Council hailed the passage of commitments by the Chilean government regarding U.S. exports. The commitments safeguard the rights of U.S. cheese and meat producers to use common names like Parmesan and Prosciutto to market and sell their products. The agreement came together in June between the U.S. Trade Representative Catherine Tai and Chile's Undersecretary of International Economic Relations.
The U.S. Department of Agriculture has reneged on its promise to let America's cattle ranchers choose the type of animal identification device that best fits their operations. Ranchers can now use low-cost ear tags, or they can use the high-cost electronic identification, or EID, ear tags, giving ranchers the choices of fundamental value we all understand. But the USDA wants a one-size-fits-all system, and beginning November 5th, ranchers will be forced to use high-cost EID ear tags when shipping adult cattle across state lines. This freedom and liberty-stripping mandate must be stopped. Congresswoman Harriet Hagman and U.S. Senator Cynthia Lummis, both from Wyoming, have introduced resolutions to overturn this mandate, and they need your help. Please call your members of Congress and urge them to support the resolutions of disapproval that will overturn the USDA's EID mandate. You can reach your members of Congress by calling 202-224-3121 and ask for them by name. This message is brought to you by RCAF USA.
From the Ag Information Network, I'm Bob Larson with today's Agribusiness Update.
Today in Farming on KPRL is brought to you by Paso Robles Glass, established in 1947, always up on the latest technology and training. They do windows right. Call Paso Robles Glass, 805-238-4014.
This Fox Business News Update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Charles Payne, and this is the Fox Business Report. Choppy trading action with stocks trying to hold on to gains after wholesale price increases were slightly hotter last month. The latest inflation data keeping a 25 basis point rate cut by the Fed next week firmly on the table. Most of the 11 S&P 500 sectors are higher, with tech leading the charge. And Amazon will be forking over billions of dollars toward the drivers that deliver its packages following threats to unionize. The e-commerce giant said it's investing about $2 billion into its delivery services program this year, and that money will result in an average national pay for drivers delivering Amazon packages to reach nearly $22 an hour, which is a 7% increase from last year. Amazon has been delivering most of its own packages with the help of small businesses around the country since 2018. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
Need life insurance but have diabetes, high blood pressure, or on anxiety meds? If you're a 50-year-old male, even porky, or with type 2 diabetes, $1 million of life insurance may only cost you about $200 a month. For affordable term life insurance, call Term Provider and speak with Big Lou at 800-444-2013. 800-444-2013 or visit BigLou.com. Remember, Big Lou's like you. He's on meds too. 800-444-2013.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
Uncle Ed's Outfitters is now open in a new location in Atascadero at the Oaks Plaza near Guesthouse Grill, offering new indoor archery range available 24 hours for members. Great for kids' parties, practices, friendly competition. We have an in-house certified gunsmith and all staff are CRPA, NRA, and USCCA firearms instructors for your educational needs. Uncle Ed's Outfitters in the Oaks Plaza in Atascadero, open Tuesday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m.
Hi, this is Chris from We Help You Legal. Legal documents should be simple and affordable. At We Help You Legal, there are no lawyers and no high costs, just certified experts to assist you with living trusts, wills, divorce matters, corporations, and LLCs.
Hi, I'm Christina. We also offer notary services. You can find us online at WeHelpYouLegal.com or call 805-237-7770.
We Help You Legal, your Central Coast legal document company.
Applause Children's Musical Theater is taking registrations for fall and spring. Singing, dancing, and acting for children of all ages. Register now. Each session is limited to only 40 children. For fall, children ages 10 and over, Mary Poppins. And under 10, Charlie Brown Christmas. Or register for next spring to be in Shrek. The performances are at the Christian Life Center on Oak Street in Paso Robles. Sign up now at applausechildrenstheater.com.
Memory is pretty selective. When it comes to the good old days, it leaves out a lot of the not so good. I'll be right back.
Reagan, in his own voice, is brought to you by Mills Construction. For architectural, metal, roofing, and siding, call Aaron at 610-1256.
Not so long ago, I found myself in a discussion concerning the state of the world with some young people, including my own children. Strangely enough, it wasn't old Dad who was nostalgic about the good old days and sour about today's world. No, it was the now generation who were pessimistic about where we are and where we're going. They also seemed resentful toward me because I'd known that other world of yesterday when life was simple and good with joy on every hand. Before I knew it, my memory machine was functioning the way it's supposed to on a psychiatrist's couch, dredging up particulars, not just the rosy nostalgia that comes to mind when you hear an old song. Now, don't get me wrong. My memories are pretty happy, and I enjoy closing my eyes now and then for a rerun or two. But I also find life exciting and good today, in truth better, in most respects. I looked at these young people and wanted them to feel good about the world they've inherited. They'd already covered such things as present-day pollution, our grasping materialism, and the commercial rip-off in modern-day merchandising. So for a little while, they heard about the old nightly chore of banking the coal furnace, that shoveling ashes on the fire to keep the coals alive through the night, the cold early morning journey to the basement to shake the grate, uncover the embers, and shovel in coal, and dressing in the shivering cold while you waited for the house to warm. As for their worry about air pollution, they were reminded that in the earlier times, every chimney in town belched black smoke and soot every day from fall till summer. Having been born in a small country town, I could also tell them of that nighttime walk through the snow to that little wooden building out back of the house, a journey repeated in the morning. Summer brought the flies incubated in those outhouses, and there was an outhouse for every home, store, and public building. I went on about the apple barrel in the cellar, the ice box, the lack of fresh vegetables in winter. But let me go back a century or more so this won't be just a personalized trip down memory lane. Dr. John J. Maketa, chairman of the National Air Quality Commission, has written an essay which helps set the record straight on pollution and related subjects. In passing, he gives a capsule description of the really good old days about 150 years ago. For one thing, he says, life was short. Life expectancy for males was 38 years. It was a hard 38 years, too, for the work week was 72 hours. For women, it was even worse. Their household chores ran to about a 98-hour week. They scrubbed floors by hand, made clothes the same way, brought in firewood, cooked in heavy iron pots, and fought off insects without pesticides. There were no fresh vegetables except in their season of ripening, so vitamin deficiency diseases were common. Epidemics were an annual occurrence and usually claimed the life of someone in the family. If we think water pollution is a problem now, it was deadly then. One typhoid epidemic in Philadelphia caused by polluted water carried off one-fifth of the population. It was a time when most people never traveled more than 20 miles from their birthplace, never heard an orchestra or saw a play. As Dr. Maketa says, perhaps the simple life was not so simple. Because we've all been treated to so much misinformation about pollution, I'm going to give you some more of the facts the doctor has collected in the next couple of days. I think you'll be surprised and relieved. He says and proves that we're not on the brink of ecological disaster. This is Ronald Reagan. Thanks for listening.
Reagan, in his own voice, brought to you by Mills Construction, specializing in pre-engineered metal buildings. Call Aaron at 610-1256.
KPRL presents Sound Off, the longest-running radio talk show in San Luis Obispo County. Sound Off on the North County's choice for local talk, KPRL. The views and opinions expressed on Sound Off do not necessarily reflect those of KPRL, its management, staff, or sponsors.
Sound Off on AM 1230, KPRL, and 99.3 FM is brought to you by Davis Body Shop, your auto collision specialist in Paso Robles and Atascadero.
This is Sound Off, where the North County comes to talk on the right choice, KPRL.
Welcome to Sound Off. My name is Karen Veeley. I'm the host of Sound Off on Wednesdays and Thursday afternoons. I'm also an investigative reporter with Cal Coast News. We have recently published a pair of stories that I think everybody should read. Whom did Derek Johnson serve, San Luis Obispo or Adam Hill? And San Luis Obispo's manager bent over backwards for Adam Hill. Recently released court documents show that the city manager, former city manager of San Luis Obispo, Derek Johnson, and the previous city manager of San Luis Obispo, Katie Lichtig, who is currently running for office, were involved in directing staff to do favors for developers who were paying Adam Hill bribes. There's going to be a big story coming out tomorrow on the corruption case. That will be posted sometime tomorrow afternoon. And it's a huge part of the puzzle. But today I'm going back to my, I think it's kind of like a candidate debate, candidate forum. We are being very careful not to influence. So this last week and this week has been the Paso Robles Joint Unified School District. What district are you? Okay, we have District 6. We have both candidates, Leo Castillo and Adelita Haichu. They are going to be discussing, they come up with the questions. They both sent me five questions. We go back and forth on the questions. And these are what questions they believe are important and they want to discuss. Both people ask both questions. And I am not taking phone calls during the debates and the debate forums. Next week will be the Paso Robles City Council, both District 1 and District 3. And then I think 2 weeks later, we're going to have the Atascadero City Council candidates. So we will be having quite a bit of candidate forums over the next 2 or 3 weeks. We're going to have both candidates tell you why they're running and explain a little bit about themselves, and then we'll get into the questions. Adelita, will you tell us a little bit about yourself and why you're running and what you bring to the table?
Sure. My name is Adelita Haichiu. Thank you so much, Karen, for having me today. I'm running for school board trustee Area 6. I'm running on a platform of community collaboration and commitment. I have a long record of volunteering in the community, and particularly with the school district. I was elected to my first site council that oversees Title I monies at each individual school site in 2014. I've been on LCAPs and PTAs. I'm currently the PTA president of Virginia Peterson. I really enjoy volunteering and participating in community activities. I've been in Cub Scout leadership. I ran the Cub Scout day camp with my husband. We were co-directors. I've been a Girl Scout co-leader, which is, you know, kind of a wild time during cookie season. I've been on the Pat Butler PTA. I've coached soccer without a great knowledge of that, but figured it out. I'm currently on the Paso Robles High School Site Council. I'm currently on the Virginia Peterson Site Council. I'm currently the Virginia Peterson PTA president. And I currently serve on the Parents Helping Parents Board, which is a support group system and training program for parents with students with special needs.
Thank you very much, Adelita. And Leo, why are you running, and what is important to you, and what do you bring to the table?
Thank you for having me, Karen, and good to see you again, Adelita. So much like Adelita, I'm one of those people that is obnoxiously involved in their community. You know, it's kind of a joke I tend to tell my wife that I'm sorry, I'm constantly involved in things. And, you know, everything between being a board member on multiple nonprofits here in the community, whether it be the right across the street, the Paso Robles Youth Arts Center, Boys and Girls Club for the Central Coast, a couple nonprofits that have a drug nexus. Everything seems to do with the youth, you know, and I'm pretty passionate about that. I'm a firm believer in it takes a village. And I think that when you have people like myself and Adelita that want to get out there and volunteer their time to make their community better, I think that's important. I served my country for 22 years. I retired 3 years ago. I am, again, a servant of the community. I want to run for school board, not just because I feel like I bring a different perspective to the table, but also because this community has given me so much, and I appreciate living here. I've been coming here since 2003 when I deployed out of Camp Roberts. I've moved here in 2013 and wanted to raise my family in the community here because I fell in love with it. This town has embraced me as an individual soldier back in the day and embraces me and my family. I lost my son to cancer 3 years ago, and the community came out and they showed up for me and my family in that time of need and even after that. So I guess for me, it's more about providing service and giving back to the community that gave me so much.
Thank you very much. And Adelita, we're going to have you answer the first question. How would you ensure that the voices of parents, teachers, and students are heard when making important decisions for the school district?
Thank you for asking. I kind of just laid out how involved I am. I'm a parent who really enjoys using her voice to advocate in the community. I understand how important it is to bring different perspectives to places where decisions are being made. During my time as a parent in the school district, I've been a foster parent. I've been a mother with a child with special needs, and all of those different needs bring different needs. Being able to bring perspective to the table is really important to me. But there have been times where I wasn't able to make it to those spaces. And I think it's really important to me that we go to where parents are, that we make our information accessible to parents so that they can be informed when making decisions and give feedback. Because if we aren't meeting parents where they are, then we're missing out on opportunities to hear incredibly crucial voices.
Thank you very much, Adelita. And the same question for you, Leo. How would you ensure that the voices of parents, teachers, and students are heard when making important decisions for the school district?
Thank you, Karen. You know, for me, I've always been a fan of town hall meetings. Back in the day when I worked with a nonprofit that focused on a drug nexus, we would host town hall meetings. Actually, Sandra Williams came and spoke to us about, you know, drug use and abuse and the dangers behind that to parents. And I feel like that open forum is a good way to get information out, but also pull information in from families. I feel like that would be a strategy that would be easily implemented at each school, because every school is different, the culture is different, the socioeconomic background is different, the teachers are different, and they all have different struggles and different concerns. Having an open forum like that in a town hall, it could easily be mimicked across the board and also cater to each audience, whether that be students, families, and teachers alike. Taking that information back to the school board and providing the school board with some kind of a snapshot of what each school is seeing and hearing or dealing with, I think is a great way for them to be open, candid, and just vulnerable to let them know what's going on in that location.
Thank you very much, Leo. And I'm going to ask you this question first. The district superintendent will have to make staff cuts this coming year due to budget constraints. How will you respond to your constituents in regard to this sensitive topic as a board member if elected? What other cuts would you deem appropriate?
You know, I met with Superintendent Loftus, and I believe that this is going to be a real hard thing for her, the hard decisions that she has to make coming our way. But she does have some plans to have the least amount of impact, and I believe in her plans, and I believe in her. I think that she's going to put us back on track, and that's really reassuring. You know, in the past, we've had a lot of excessive spending and constraints with funding. I feel like the excessive spending that happened and mismanagement of Bauer Spec being built took 3 years and doubled the budget. I think that was a way of, you know, putting the nail in the coffin, so to say. I also feel that as far as some of our expenses regarding charter buses, I feel like that's a little bit extravagant, and there's other ways that we can, you know, fix that and not have to rely on such luxuries that we can't afford. I think by backing Superintendent Loftus on her plans and supporting her is the best way I could support her into the community and to the rest of the constituents.
Thank you very much, Leo. And Adelita, I'm going to ask you the same question. The district superintendent will have to make staff cuts this coming year due to budget constraints. How will you respond to your constituents in regard to this sensitive topic as a board member if elected? What other cuts would you deem appropriate?
I want to talk about some of the causes of losing these monies. We're losing COVID monies that were temporary monies coming into the district that are coming to an end. And with declining enrollment, we are losing our ADA allotment based on our 3-year enrollment average. So there are a lot of factors going into where the money is, where we're losing money. As far as how I would address my constituency as a potential board member, I strongly advocate for transparency. I think that the scariest thing as a parent is hearing things through a grapevine and not being given the information up front. I believe that right now I see the district making efforts to share the information, but it's not always in a way that every parent can understand. I think that we need to find a way to break down the information, the budgeting process for families so that they can better understand them, so that they can better advocate for their children, for their families, and have an opinion on what's happening instead of looking at these big, broad numbers and feeling scared. I think it'll go a long way in building trust back in the school district. And I have to agree with Leo. I met with Superintendent Loftus, and she recognizes the hardships that we're facing right now. And I really do feel that she has a plan that will help lead us through this next wave of hardships. But I would just like to reiterate that transparency and making this information manageable for the average family in Paso Robles and community member will be crucial.
Thank you very much, Adelita. And I'm going to have you do the next question first. Okay. Discipline seems to be a major issue. No, I'm sorry. What actions would you prioritize to improve support and resources for students with special needs in our schools?
Earlier, you asked me my why, and I accidentally rambled off my resume without giving my why. This is my why. I have a child with special needs in the district, and this is a topic near and dear to my soul. I have had a difficult time navigating the special education system as a parent, and I feel like a very informed parent in a lot of other areas. I would really like to see the district help inform parents coming in better on how to best advocate for their children. And I am a part of some other groups. There are other groups, that nonprofits that are available to families that I would love to see partner specifically with the Paso Robles School District. Our test scores for students with special needs it's hard to see. And I think that if we start building connections with greater community assets, that we'll be able to turn this around for us. And that starts with our families. That starts with our parents, like myself.
Thank you.
This is my one. This is my one. Thank you.
Thank you, Adelita. And I'm going to ask you, Leo, the same question. What actions would you prioritize to improve support and resources for students with special needs in our schools?
So I guess for me, I would have to ask the question of, well, what issues are they actually having? And as a parent of a student with an IEP, you know, I've seen the SPED department, not just from my former employment at Almond Acres, but I've also worked with the school district, Paso School District, for my kid. And I've seen the SPED department struggle and strive. I've seen them be successful with supporting my kid, and I've seen them drop the ball, and at no fault to their own. You know, they're incredibly overwhelmed department in on a national level, not just here locally. So I guess for me, as far as my prioritizing would go, I would probably go out to each SPED department within the district and just try to figure out what needs they have, what struggles are they having. Because again, each school site is going to be incredibly different from the other. Each school is going to have a different SPED population than the other. And I feel like if we get to know what their problems are, that's the best way that a board can actually come and find out and then come to some resolve and then bring it back to the community, but also bring it back to that student so that student does get all the services they need.
Thank you very much, Leo. And now we're going to, Leo, you're going to answer this one first. Discipline seems to be a major issue at the middle school and high school in regards to prevention of issues as well as the issuing of consequences. This is a concern that has been brought up by numerous families and has caused many to leave the district and enroll in homeschool opportunities. According to the district's 23-24 LCAP, suspensions were considered to be very high. What is your thought on suspensions, and how would you attempt at reducing suspensions while still enforcing consequences for infractions conducted at school?
So for me, in regards to suspensions, and in my experience working at a school where I was a student affairs coordinator, you know, you're constantly under the microscope of the County Office of Education because suspensions are frowned upon, you know, and they don't necessarily always meet the need that you want to get out of that student.
And I'm going to let Leo finish what he is talking about with this question when we come back after a word from our sponsors.
You know, I was very pleased with not only the repair done by Davis Body Shop, but also their professionalism. Jason was courteous and explained the work to be done in clear terms. I was sent regular texts to keep me up to date on the progress of the repairs, and the job was finished in the time schedule he'd estimated. I would recommend Davis for any auto body work that needs to be done.
Nobody says it better than Ann from Paso Robles when she tells her story about her experience at Davis Body Shop. We've been telling you for over 50 years about Davis Body Shop, why we're the longest established auto body repair shop on the Central Coast, offering a lifetime warranty on repairs. Discover the Davis difference at Davis Body Shop, El Camino Real, Atascadero, or on Theater Drive at Paso Chevrolet. Online, davisbodyshop.com.
As the markets have their ups and downs, real estate remains one of the most stable assets in everyone's portfolio. Hi, this is Cindy Mims, owner broker of Colony Mortgage, voted best mortgage company in North County 3 years running. We offer conventional FHA, VA, and reverse mortgages and 100% purchase loans for first-time home buyers. Are you a builder and tired of the red tape when dealing with banks and expensive hard money loans? I have a great new option. Or are you 62 years or older? You can possibly eliminate your monthly mortgage payment and get cash in your pocket. At Colony Mortgage, we have hometown service with competitive rates. We have years of experience with creative financing to find that right loan for you. If it's credit issues stopping you, let us help. We move from our 20-year Atascadero location and now offer two convenient locations to meet personally in Atascadero and Paso Robles. Call 805-466-3598. Thank you for supporting your local businesses.
Driven to be the best.
The veteran-owned Ted Miles Motors in Atascadero.
The cars you want, the people you like.
Serving you for 49 consecutive years.
Just plain good deals without the hype.
Ted Miles Motors, same location since 1975.
Selling cars the way it should be done. And giving you service that's second to none.
Driven to be the best.
Ted Miles Motors, in business for 49 years, has sold over 13,000 vehicles, and is the longest established used car dealer in San Luis Obispo County. So whether buying or selling a car, truck, van, SUV, motorhome, or classic car, visit their easy-to-navigate website, TedMilesMotors.com, or their showroom, 7380 El Camino Real in Atascadero, next to Farrell's Auto Repair.
Driven to be the best!
Ted Miles Motors, Atascadero.
Welcome to the driver's seat of freedom. Get behind the wheel and find your freedom faster. Win one of two Chevy Corvette Stingrays or a share of $50,000 in slot replay from Chumash Casino Resort. Drawing September 15th, 5 p.m. to 10 p.m. Welcome to freedom. Must be present to win. Must be 21 or older. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Welcome back to Sound Off. This is Karen Feely. I'm your host on Wednesdays and Thursdays. Today we have Leo Castillo and Adelita Haichu from the Paso Robles School District, District 5 race, and District 6 race. and we are at going through questions. I just started a question with Leo, and we had to go to a break, so I'm going to just repeat the second half of the question. According to the district, 23-24 LCAP suspensions were considered to be very high. What is your thought on suspensions, and how would you attempt at reducing suspensions while still enforcing consequences for infractions that happen at school?
Thank you, Karen. So in regards to my experience working at Almond Acres as a student affairs coordinator, my job was to issue out suspensions. Obviously, every school district is under the microscope when it comes to the County Office of Education, and it's frowned upon to do too many suspensions, especially for students with English language learners, SPED, and, you know, socioeconomic students. So the way that I was able to combat that was to create a different type of consequence so that the students that do conduct an infraction do learn a lesson from their misbehavior. I partnered with local organizations like the Echo Food Shelter, First Fruits Farm in San Luis Obispo, the San Miguel Mission, and the VFW, to name a few. And what I did was I issued out an hour of consequence time, which was volunteer time at those locations. The best part to this was their parent had to accompany them, and it was done on the weekends or it was done after school hours. So the student would not have to be suspended and miss academic time. And they weren't just going to be sitting at home on a device waiting for mom and dad to come home from work. They were actually doing something positive. So I saw that a lot of families actually appreciated this. You know, them showing up at First Fruits Farm and having to work the land and do something as far as get their hands dirty and give back to a community was a much more positive consequence than just sending them home for the day for whatever their infraction was. So for me, that's something that I feel that should be implemented. Community service is huge. I feel like showing children that it's okay to give back. It's okay to give away an hour of your time to do something positive. And if they're doing it because they did something wrong, I see nothing wrong with that. I think it's a great way.
Thank you very much, Leo. And Adelita, according to the district 23-24 LCAP, suspensions were considered to be very high. What is your thought on suspensions, and how would you attempt at reducing suspensions while still enforcing consequences?
I just want to say that I really like that perspective, Leo, of community service. I think it's important that our students give back to the community, especially in that's a positive response to a disciplinary action. In regards to our current situation, it's scientifically proven that children thrive when there's consistency and structure. And right now, I don't necessarily think that structure or consistency in follow through is happening for our students. I think it's particularly highlighted by Superintendent Loftus putting out an email to parents regarding racism and having to readdress actions and consequences. I think this is such a crucial step in the right direction. We are identifying a problem. We are identifying how that problem will be met swiftly. I put a quote in my little notes here from Superintendent Loftus that she said, we cannot allow any form of racist language or commentary, and it is our collective responsibility to address it. And I think that is really succinct and to the point that I believe I'm making, that we collectively, this is community-wide at this point, but in our schools, it's incumbent on every member of a school staff to address an issue when it comes to disciplinary action swiftly. And I think that will really help our students. I think when we give those children those expectations, they'll rise, and then we'll start to see them thrive. I did want to also note that at the August 6th board meeting, Tom Harrington presented the district's new approach to suspensions, and it's a three-tiered system that offers our students a different avenues of disciplinary action rather than jumping right to suspension.
And we're going to have to take a break and a word from our sponsors. We'll be back after the top of the hour.
AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.
It's 1 o'clock.